That's right, Dave Pezzo. Dave Pezzo joining us. Kevin Miller in the morning here. Up and Adam, ready to go. Dave Pezzo, Pezzo Center, Pezzo Financial. Money matters here on KIDO Talk Radio. We're going to let you start. Anything that we should be looking out for? I have a lot to go over. By the way, you can join Dave now, 580-5436, 580-KIDO.
Nothing to watch out for. Just same old right now. We've got it's all about trade, the trade talks, and whether China capitulates, because I don't believe that Trump will, and they have to save face, and I know they're in the long game, and everybody, the Chinese are going to win at this. They're not going to win. They're going to win. Or they're going to dump our bonds. You just name all the things that all the doom and gloomers have been talking about for years, and the reality is that none of that's going to happen, and I think that they, in the end, are going to figure out a way to sign a deal with the United States and move on.
All right. Nothing else you want to share with us, because we're ready to go here.
I'm a little nervous, Kevin. You've been spending some time this weekend getting fired up on the business side. So
indeed. Let's start locally. A story from the Statesman last week. 75 new homes for every 100 new households. Treasure Valley facing a severe housing shortage coming up. Really not much we can do about it. You have Star saying no, or the developer saying no to 1,500 new homes. You have the people in Eagle saying goats could run the city more effectively than the current city council and the current mayor. We're seeing more and more cities and areas struggling with the growth.
Yeah, they are. No doubt. And when people are moving into the valley so quickly, you have good economic activity, but you also have negative lifestyle things. And right now, the growth is really, really tough for us to handle. And I think it is hard on the cities. There's no doubt in my mind that it is. But we've seen Boise continue to raise taxes. I'm sure the other cities, I know Meridian's been talking about it. But the tax rates are, the mill rate itself has been going much, much higher. And so not just property values pushing those taxes up, but we're apparently wanting to play catch up to really low tax states like California. And that, I think, is going to push back on housing as well, because it simply is part of the ever-rising cost of housing is how high those taxes are going to be layered on top.
Right, and we're seeing that in Nampa with impact fees going up, Meridian already having their impact fees going up. Then we have a story recently where the housing is blowing up, more people are moving here, but the wages haven't kept up pace. Dave Pezzo, you've been talking about this as long as I've known you, this affordable housing. We're not talking about cheap homes. We're talking about homes here in the Treasure Valley. In fact, there's a program called The Boise Boys,
mm-hmm.
and it's on HG Television. It's by it profiles two young men. We've had them on the program. It's called Timber and Love. It's a real estate company. And they were talking about starter homes in West Boise. Yeah, you know, a starter home, you know, $200,000-$300,000 for a first home.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
I don't know what world people are living in, but we have these wonderful homes, and we have people in Idaho. It's been going on for about, what, 3 or 4 years, not being able to afford to get in them.
Yeah, it's true. It is becoming a much more expensive market. It's very inexpensive compared to California, and that's part of our problem. You have the exodus of people from California. Just spent part of the weekend with some folks from California talking about that very problem. For example, in the area that California they're in, which is near the Bay Area, is about $120,000 a year is the poverty level, Kevin. Poverty, $120,000. And you think about that and imagine that translating here. So they leave, come here and find a $200,000 or $300,000 starter home. To them, it is very, very inexpensive. It's just that it's tough for people to get that down payment and get started.
Right. But you take a look at what we're going to do about it. Again, 1,500 homes not going into the community of Star. As someone who lives in Star, I will tell you that's a good thing. Now, people on the economic development side will say, not so fast, you're losing that revenue, but the infrastructure just still isn't there. So what is the role of local governments? What is the role of state governments to sit there? What is the role of ACHG in Ada County to do something about it? I had someone the other day talking about the jail in Canyon County. We all knew that was going down,
right?
Because it was Jim and Middleton said, hey, and Randy the biker saying, what have they been doing with all the money that has been coming in for all these people?
Exactly.
Where has that money gone?
Good for them. I agree with them. It's the same thing as schools. We just go, oh my gosh, we need to build a new school. The schools are falling down. We need a bond right now. As if we can't plan 20 years ahead. We can't figure out that if there are a whole bunch of elementary school kids, that there might actually be a whole bunch of junior high and high school kids. They might equate each other. So we create a crisis in government. And it's really what politicians do. If you plan ahead, then you can't suck more money out of people. We need to work on a panic or a crisis basis instead of a thoughtful planning basis. So to me, government doesn't plan. It's like politics 101. The best thing you can do is create a crisis, and then you can go ahead and raise money that way. And you can get more and more and more money, which gives you more and more and more power. It seems to be the way government works to me. I don't know very many politicians that actually plan forward. I think that there are some, but by and large, Kevin, they don't. And as far as the decision-making process, I know I keep talking about this Americana deal, but to think about how many roads and bridges, anything that has to be fixed, expanded and all, to allow more cars through, what we did was we take all of last summer and obviously tens of millions of dollars to take Americana, a perfectly fine road, and take it from four lanes down to two, which obviously helps with traffic in order to have a bike lane. Now, to me, that's the kind of decision that we go, that just makes your head spin or explode, however you want to think about it. But that's the kind of decision, instead of widening Shinden, and you might say that's a state highway, whatever, but you can name another dozen projects that could easily have used that money and that time. And that's the kind of decision-making process that makes no sense to me. If you need a bike lane, expand the sidewalk, for gosh sakes. There's a lot of different solutions than to tear a whole road out and make it more narrow. It's like the idea of making Main Street right in front of my building. They've tried to do this twice, turn it from a three-lane road into two with a bike lane. It's idiotic.
I take it you're not a biker.
I am a biker.
You ride the bike?
I do.
Right.
We like to ride
the
bike.
On the streets?
From our house, yes, to the Greenbelt, yes.
All right, Dave Petzo, there you ask a question, get an answer. Phone number 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Getting back to this growth, you've got Eagle residents. They want their mayor recalled. They're tired of this. And I was driving around Eagle this weekend. Lots of land for development.
Yeah.
And try and give the politicians a little benefit of the doubt. Who would have thought it would be blowing up, considering 6 years ago, it was the Great Recession.
It blew up. It did blow up in the other direction. Yeah. Yeah. It's really something to drive around out there. It really is. And you're right. We need to catch up with infrastructure. Things have changed. You can't blame politicians for that. And not everybody's going to get what they want.
You just did.
I do. I do blame them for dumb decisions, but I don't blame them for all of a sudden, 10 years ago, we're in total decline, and what we should have foreseen at that time was the rapid growth and built everything out. Of course you can't do that. But they are here, and I think they need to make right decisions, and they're not. I don't blame them for the fact that the recession got ended, and we are moving forward so rapidly. But you're right, Kevin. It's been an amazing turnaround, particularly in Eagle.
Speaking of getting ready for new regimes, Mayor Beter is running for re-election. Looks like he's going to have a couple challengers. You have Mayor Tammy DeVeard in Meridian, not seeking re-election. So you've got a few people running in there. We could see some major turnover. Most people believe that Mayor Beter will be re-elected. Maybe yes, maybe no. But people like you that live in Boise, that have businesses in Boise, have been very frustrated by, a few years ago, he wanted to build a trolley, then embracing the bike lane people, and then ribbon cutting all the time, and the taxes continuing to go up. Could there be a change in the city of Boise? And then you've got Meridian, that if you talk to the people in Meridian or around Meridian, everything Meridian touches turns to gold, except the congestion that is strangling that great city as well. So, different leaders, different, changing of the guard. Could that impact our area at all, do you think?
Yeah, I think it could. I mean, you have different regimes that come in, and they have different ideas. Kevin, for example, that I really thought Butch Otter did a fine job as a governor, but in my mind, it's time. And I think that people, we need new ideas sometimes. And I don't mean new goofy ideas. We don't need new ideas like...
I don't think there's a lot of new ideas coming out of the
AOC
statehouse
or something, right? I don't think we need new ideas that are stupid. But what we do need is new people that come in that are not embedded. They're not embedded in the local area. And
you know who had a lot of new ideas?
Who?
Tommy Ahlquist.
Oh, really?
A lot of new ideas.
Yeah.
that was a change that Idaho would have been on the right side for. My own personal opinion. That was change, but that didn't happen. So, you know, I'm going back at you on your point. You look at Governor Little,
yep.
Great guy, works well. He's calling Garth Brooks. I'd rather have him call Donald Trump personally. I don't think our politicians should be entertainers, but when you have a Malia-led press corps, that's what you do. However, that's just more of the same.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it is your not point? More of the same. No, it's not a good point.
Your point?
At all.
It's an
My
extension
point.
Of the Otter administration,
I don't
it
think
not?
It is. I don't think it is at all. In fact, you and I have talked about this before, that it is, in fact, a different group of people and different administrators, and that's the key to any administration coming in. Are they going to just have the same people in there that actually run all these departments? And the answer is no. He's had new people as well as some of the old ones he kept, but interviewed all were fired, so to speak, and had to reapply for jobs. So I do think that there's been some interesting changes, and I think that a change of pace is always an interesting thing to happen, especially when you have somebody who's been there a very long time.
Look what happened to Congress. The Republicans out, the Democrats are in. That was a change of pace.
Yeah, and as I say, not all ideas are good ideas.
Well, I had a good idea. His name was Tommy Ahlquist.
Well, he didn't make it, though, Kevin.
Well, maybe next time.
Maybe next time's right.
More coming up with Dave Petso. You're listening to Kevin Miller, KIDO Talk Radio. Rolling right along, Dave Petso with us. Want to thank so many people that came out to donate pennies. Thank you for coming out, by the way. You always support Miller's mission.
Well, I love the rescue mission, and I love you, so why wouldn't I do that? That's a hand-in-hand.
Now, this goes hand-in-hand with Petsoism. You ready for this?
I'm ready.
And this is, you know, I think our whole Penny Patrol really is embracing Dave Petsoism's financial theory of success. You're always saying, don't buy the coffee, don't buy this. I mean, what could be more of a value mm-hmm. to Dave Petso than a penny that saved is a penny earned.
Yes. That's right. Well, it's true. There is. I was actually thinking about that this morning. It's funny. I wasn't thinking about it on the Penny Patrol, but I was sitting there thinking about how, if you pay attention to the little things, how much money a person can actually put away. And so thank you for that. Yeah, you're right. It is something we try to drum that lesson home to people, because our society gives this impression that, you know, in order to get rich, you have to, you know, be a rock star, or you have to invent something. You don't. You just simply have to put a couple bucks away. You don't have to be an entrepreneur, Kevin, although most entrepreneurs are, you know, most wealthy people are entrepreneurs. That's how they got there. But you're really talking about something that if a regular guy puts away, as we've talked many times, a cup of coffee a day, $5 a day for 40 years in the markets, $1.2 million, actually over $1.2 million. That's a lot of money. You know, you may not be able to fly on a private jet, but that's only at $150 a month. A cup of coffee. So if paying attention to the little things, and we talk about this about business as well, if you don't pay attention to the little things, the big things will slip up. And you know, if you pay attention to the little things, big things take care of themselves, and you can save a lot of money.
Dave Petso joining us. Okay, a couple stories here. Before we get to the 10 big Dave Petso stories at 580-5436, 580-KIDO, new report out saying American soil, in other words, American farms, are increasingly owned by foreign entities. Are you concerned about that?
No, I'm not. I think the
maybe
this is
the
something
Chinese
too.
Are buying our farms.
Well, I don't. Yeah, you know what concerns me is the transfer of technology to China. That's what concerns me greatly. The fact that they buy, say, ag companies, not farms, but ag companies with that have all the seeds and the genetics, and they take them and run with them, or buy them, or just steal them. And so this is a real problem for us, of course. But outside, if you will, foreign companies coming in and buying land doesn't trouble me at all.
We continue on, Dave Petso. Let's take a look at some of these other stories. Number one, the trade war could shrink global output by $600 billion. You're talking about 0.5% off China's gross domestic product and 0.2% off the U.S. and the world as a whole, according to experts, if that continues in 2021. Does that impact 401ks? Does that impact people if the markets are off 0.5, 0.2%?
No, it doesn't. You know, that's the thing. It's we make news where news doesn't exist because you have to make up news every day, Kevin, and numbers are big. And so we talk about this. I say when we want to look at trade, the reality is we're now a year into a trade war, right? Is that a fair statement? Into a trade war here.
The president has delayed for 6 months the tariffs that will hit the automobile industry for obvious reasons. New car, pre-owned car sales going through the roof. Still very popular. Americans buying cars at record numbers. He doesn't want to mess with that before the election.
Correct. On top of that, though, we're talking about how many of those cars are Chinese? None. He doesn't want a trade war on multiple fronts. I think it's brilliant, actually, to be okay, we're going to deal with the Europeans. They're great. That's fine. Let's deal with that later. And we're not going to worry about that because that's mostly where that comes from. It comes from them. It comes from Japan. But China has no imports of autos. So we got the new NAFTA is now, is ready to go. And so we've got that deal. We've got Europe on hold, right? We're doing nice with Japan right now. And all we're doing is focusing like a laser beam on China. But my point is this. If we're talking about trade in a trade war situation, we would think that that was really, really super negative. But the reality is right now we have near record total trade globally. Near record total trade globally. That doesn't sound like a big old trade war. So the answer, Kevin, is numbers are big and projections are fine and people are never right with their projections. The $600 billion will be more or less than that figure, whatever it is, and we will roll on and nobody will be held accountable. That's the way it always is. But we can always come out with lots of hyperbole about how it's going to cost billions and billions and trillions of dollars and this and that, and the world goes on. And right. We talk about those losses. But the reality, Kevin, is that we are near record trade,
sure.
And it will not kill the United States GDP.
Right, but if you hit tariffs on cars, I bet it does.
That's going to hurt. Does it kill us? No. Does it ding our GDP growth? Yes. And are we going to hit tariffs on cars? No, we're not.
KIDO Talk Radio, Kevin Miller in the morning. Let's continue on talking about a few issues that matter the most with Dave Petso and a couple more things. So in China, not that it really matters, they've seized a bank for the first time in 20 years. Are we essentially tied to the Chinese? If the Chinese markets start dipping, do we start dipping?
Yes and okay. If it's a big sell-off, if for some economic reason, global economic reason, the answer is yes, all markets are affected when the big countries of the world have something that's going to affect them because we all trade together, right? But the answer is we've had a real big disconnect. The Chinese market is not done well since the trade war broke out, and ours is up. So they don't operate in tandem at all.
All right, Dave Petso, let's shift news to employment. What do you think as far as the outlook here in the Treasure Valley when we're looking at more jobs? The wages aren't where they should be. People still moving in. I mean, we've become, I don't know if you want to call it a vacation community for people retiring here from California.
Yeah.
What does that mean to our identity?
Well, I don't know if it's an identity crisis.
Wait a minute. It is. They're California plates.
Yeah.
They meet up at special places where they conspire to do California things.
Special places for California. Okay. All right.
I know of a few California groups that meet up. Some of them very good, very patriotic. Others, I need to keep an eye on.
I think that, well, Kevin, there's no doubt that our politics are changing. There's no doubt that you and I, we've talked about this a zillion times, that my Boise, right, I've been here for 40 years. My Boise's not, it's gone. It's gone forever. It's not going to be here.
What's more crowded, more angry. What has left Boise?
What has left Boise?
Yeah, you said it's gone.
Yeah, it
is gone. They've all moved to New Meadows with Tea Party Bob?
I think we're going to end up moving further and further out if you want to discover the old Idaho, right? And part of that is that, when people used to come here, they'd say, and I think they still do, because relatively we are the nicest place in the world. People here are truly nice. They look you in the eye, and they are nice. They are nicer here than they are anywhere else in the world. And I think, and I feel that changing. It is changing. It's funny, just driving around now, how much more, as you always point out, how much more aggressive drivers are. They don't stop. They just, if they see an opening, they just fly right on in. I mean, like at a stop sign, they don't stop. It's a much more aggressive.
They do
different
that in
world.
California a lot.
They do. I'm saying it's changing, and so people are moving in. So what's changing, Kevin? People's attitude, people's pace of life. Slow it down. Build a wall between us and California. I like it.
But you know, again, I don't know if there's anything we can do about it. We've identified the issue.
Yeah.
And you have a lot of good people moving here from California, but it's odd. It really is odd when you look at it from the greater scheme of things, that California, one of the greatest states ever, fourth largest economy in the world, is so bad that you have people fleeing it.
Yeah.
A lot of them coming here, a lot of them coming to other Western, going to other Western states. But it, I don't know, culturally in our history, if we've ever seen anything like it.
Well, and to understand it is a really hard thing, because you're really saying this doesn't work, so we're leaving it, and then we want to come here and vote to have the stuff we left. And you also have the people in California that are there that are continue to double down on stupid. They watch people leave. They watch businesses leave. They penalize businesses to stay. And what we need to do is we need to raise taxes more and have more regulation. It's insane. But they won't change, because if you are political and you only are political, why would you want to change, Kevin? You don't change. You don't change your mind. Don't let the facts get in the way of your stupidity. I mean, you just sit there and make the same decisions over and over again. It's crazy.
Dave Pezzo, catch him at the Pezzo Center, Pezzo Financial, and Saturday's Money Matters exclusively here on KIDO Talk Radio. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, good morning. Welcome. Thanks for joining us. And, of course, we'd love to have you join us live at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. You know, it's a rough week for sure, and we'll get to that, you know, and trade and all those other things. And of course, as we've been kind of doing lately, it's, you know, what are we thinking about? What are we noodling on now? And we'll talk about that in the second hour. What I hadn't talked about recently, and it is recent news anyway, is what they're talking about in Congress. And part of that is that, it's Congress. Do I really think they're going to do anything at all except investigate the president? I'm not sure they are, but they did have some meetings, and I think it's worth at least mentioning that they're making noises about changing some of the things with the IRAs, if you will, with retirement plans. And some are good, and some are, you know, make a lot of flashy headlines and don't really do anything, in my opinion. But it is interesting that we're now talking about annuities again. Now, this is different. Annuities, giving people the option of taking money out for the rest of their life in the form of a monthly check because they're not comfortable, say, investing. Okay. At least they have it in a form of an income for life. But I want to talk about it. You know, let me run down what the bill is, and then let's circle back to the annuities, okay? So first of all, we've got a change in the required minimum distribution age of 70 and a half to 72. And I don't think that's a big deal. It makes sense to me that you, as people are living longer, we can push off the required distribution date. All the government wants is taxes on that money, and people are living longer, so they're going to get their tax hit anyway. So I don't think that's much of a change at all. The one that people are making a lot of noise about, like this is suddenly going to get a lot of people involved in retirement plans, is that small businesses can band together and instead of having their own 401k. Theoretically, reducing the cost tremendously. But I'm not sure how that really reduces costs much, because you're still going to have to administrate. For example, Pezzo Financial is going to have a 401k, and instead of having one on its own, we're going to be with, we're in downtown, so let's just say Echelon, which is right across the street, right? Furniture store. And so we're going to be in that one, and then there's 10 others, right? And then we're all gathered together. But how do we keep all the money separate? Because you've got now hundreds of players in the plan. You go, well, how is that different? I'm not sure it's very different. I'm sure we have to pay for administration just the same way as you always do. Now, whether they can streamline it and cut out a few forms to cut the cost down, I'm all for that. But I just don't think it's a big deal. I really don't. I don't think businesses are going to, wow, okay, suddenly it costs nothing and it was so expensive before. Neither's true. And in my mind, so I'm not thinking that's a really big deal, although they make a big fuss about now making it more available to people. We'll see about that, and we'll see if they even pass it. But the big feature that they're talking about is annuities. And in this light, I think it's a positive that just having an option in there for people that like, well, no, I don't care what you say. I don't care. I don't want to have control or of it, of the money. I just want a monthly income as long as I'm alive. And that's what an annuity originally was. And that's fine. And I say fine because, but Dave, you don't like annuities. And you're right. So let me rephrase it this way. 90, probably closer to 99% of all annuities sold are sold incorrectly, deceptively, without full disclosures, in the wrong circumstances, with way too much of a person's money and way too high of commissions. Okay? That's not what these are. This won't have a commission on it. This is with the companies direct. Whoever's administrating the 401k, it'll simply have an option to trade your pile of money for income for life based on age. That's it. Simple based on age. It's not going to be a commission in it because somebody's selling an annuity. So they will be a straight up, no bells and whistles, no, get this, wink, wink, you can participate in the upside of the market and no risk. No more Wall Street casino for you. None of that. None of that. It's going to be a pure, straightforward, fixed income annuity. No bells and whistles, no noise, no misleading, wow, get this, you can do. None of that. None of that. It's not going to have that. Or your income's, you know, we're going to give you 18% return the first year. No, you're not. No, you're not. That's an income benefit, completely different, and blah, blah, blah. Okay, all right, that's another time. None of that nonsense is going to be the case. And so when we're looking at this, it's a different ballgame. This, to me, is the one option that is kind of a game changer. I don't happen to agree with it being as a good choice, particularly in a low interest rate environment. And here's particularly why I wanted to talk about it. Because people are retiring today and tomorrow and 6 months ago. And they're offered in their pension funds, not all people, government does not offer this option. But you can take a lump sum. In other words, you can take a chunk of money and leave the plan, not a monthly income. Because a pension plan is based on, for example, I work there for X amount, I make X amount of money, and it goes into this formula, and I am entitled to $1,500 a month, say, for the rest of my life. And then on that, you have all kinds of options, right? You know, what if I want to cover my spouse and all of those other things that kind of are in there. So, but let's take the purity of it and not start layering in, if you will, insurance costs, because that's what it is. It's insurance, right? Because a spouse isn't going to get a check unless you die. That's called life insurance. But I digress. There's just different options, but please don't get stuck on those. What we're saying is it's based on that $1,500 a month. Now that $1,500 is thrown into a calculator. Boom. How much could I take in a lump sum? But here's the main part of that I want people to understand. When interest rates are very, very, very low, and they are now, then insurance companies, the people that underwrite the annuities, right, need a bigger amount of money to provide that, right? Because that is the only investment vehicle they have available, right? It's not like they have a magic 10% bond thing and you're only getting 2 on a 10-year treasury. That's not how it works. So when rates are really low, it takes a bigger lump sum to to provide that $1,500 a month in our example. When interest rates are higher, the lump sum goes down. Precisely the reason that right now an annuity option within a pension plan is not a great idea, in my mind. You have no flexibility. You can do much better on the outside than a fixed annuity and so on and so forth, but you do have the investment risk. I'm not saying that annuities are a good idea inside of this new plan being proposed. In fact, I'm saying the opposite. Right now is not the time. But it's a big possibility, and there'll be a lot of discussion about it if it goes anywhere at all in Congress about annuities. And I don't want it to be confused with the annuity pimps of the world. Those are bad. They'll remain bad. And as I've pointed out before, even in RIA world, registered investment advisory world, that's the world I'm in, where no commissions are charged on these products, they're awful. Absolutely awful. I have multiple better options. Everything's better. Just a simple structured note, a CD that's tied to the market is way better. Not even close. It's not even close. And they've taken all the commissions out. So imagine when you put the commissions in for the annuity pimps of 10%, which is what they are, how bad that is. It's just off the charts horrifying. But we're going to hear about annuities, and I don't want you to confuse it. Because the annuity pimps are still after your money. And it's tied up like nearly forever. 10 years, 15 years. You know, the third year you realize, oh my gosh, I'm not getting market returns with no risk. I'm not getting any return above inflation on this. I want out. Or I got this incredible pitch and I made a mistake. I didn't look on page 23 of how I really don't have any money here in the market. I want out. And you can't because you're trapped. The commissions are so high that the surrender charges to get out mean you have to pay so much. I mean, it's off the rails how expensive. We've talked about it a million times, but when we're talking about annuities again, it's important to bring it up. These things are bad. I mean, really bad. I don't know why they're legal. I honestly don't. There's so many options that are available out there that are way better. If people are like, I just can't stand to take any downside risk. Okay. Then why don't you do a CD that's tied to the S&P? They don't put caps on it. They don't have a game to play, and they don't have 10% commissions. Straight up. Because nobody bought me a dinner and coerced me into putting all my money into an annuity. It's a bad business, and it's a bad practice, and it preys upon the most susceptible in our society. And that's why I don't understand. That's why I'm adamant about the Department of Insurance not doing anything about it or doing very little about it. They need to do more. So be careful out there, and don't let this happy talk about annuities be confusing in your mind, if you will, right? Because it's not. It's not the same thing at all, and I think it's a good option, and I think we're going to talk more about it. I don't think there's anything wrong with putting it in pensions for people that need it. It's a straight up, straightforward, no high commission, no misleading sales pitches. Just, it's an option. I don't think it's an option you want to take, particularly when interest rates are low. But it's an option, and it's okay. Not to be confused with the annuity pimps out there. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net if you prefer email. We're going to be right back, and I want to talk to you. So please do ring us up, and we'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. Again, 580-5436, 580-KIDO. That is our number, and of course, we are here to talk with you. You know, one of the things that that brought up this annuity, or you're seeing more of it, is the discussions that are happening inside of, you know, around the whole annuity thing. Wall Street Journal, if you want some other opinion, not mine, about how hideous, ridiculous, terrible, expensive annuities are and how bad an idea it is, just check the Wall Street Journal out. I believe, it was Thursday's. It's Thursday's journal. It's an inside supplement. It talks about some folks that have taken it upon themselves to move out of the world of high finance, if you will. And in one case, a teacher retired in order to teach teachers how to stay away from and what the costs were. And it is interesting. The word, the message has been getting out. I just don't know why. I don't know why people haven't fully embraced that this is a really bad area of the market. But if you do want that, it's in the Thursday Wall Street Journal. And I'm sure, absolutely sure, because it's part of Barron's supplement in there. And it talks extensively about retirement planning, goal setting, things like that. And then the second page talks about the super high costs of annuities. And we're not even talking about the crooked ones I talk about, right? The equity indexed and the people that, you know, you're going to get market participation without risk and nonsense like that. It's just straight up how expensive annuities are. So if you don't, you know, if it's not enough, you want some more data, there's another one, another source out there. It's all over the place. You type in annuities or costs of annuities, you're going to get a lot of stuff, probably thousands of articles, way too much, on how horrible they are. So please be careful. Please be careful. It's not, I'm not on a one-man crusade here. All advisory firms, all CFPs, all good people in this industry are not on a crusade. I guess because I'm here to educate and do so on Saturdays, yes, I would be more of a crusade for me of educating people on the landmines that these are. So please be careful on those, okay? If you can't, just stay away from an... Just stay away. One other area, if you could, let me digress a little bit here and talk about that too. So what kind of information seminars should you go to, right? Before I say none, I'm going to say 99% are selling you, right? Maybe 100% are. And therefore, I would say none. But it's interesting when we have a client meeting. It's not, you know, we're just, it's a client appreciation thing. And we've had people ask us before, say, well, I don't go to those because I don't want to be sold something. It's like, well we're not. And so if you know that they're really not selling anything, that, for example, we have a doctor talking about nutrition or we have an economist coming in talking about it. We had a comedian one dinner thing we did. It was really funny, super fun. Communication experts, motivation experts, stuff like that. But that would be the small, hopefully, and the thought would be, you know, anyway, you didn't get a flyer in the mail from somebody you didn't know. Those almost always are. But there's another one out there that you got to be careful with, too. And those are trusts. And please be careful out there as well for your neighbor and things like that, because there really are some super bad attorneys out there that are promoting trusts in situations that aren't necessary. And I'm not a lawyer. And so that's not my judgment. I'm only using the statistics from Idaho, from the Idaho Bar, that 90% of the living trusts sold are not necessary. And some of them are really expensive. We've seen senior abuse in this area that is frightening. We've seen people build in excess of $10,000, won $20,000 by a couple who are attorneys. And for what? I mean, even if they're trying to justify a living trust in a circumstance where a person has $40,000 worth of assets. 40. 40,000. You're going to take half? You know, I'm not here to judge people literally in the hereafter, but I got to believe that this is not exactly a good thing. I just can't believe that people intentionally mislead and steal people who are finishing up their life, who are not thinking very clearly, don't know. This lady, this wasn't her world, is legal world, financial world. And it's just one of those things we came in contact with. And it's just, I just don't understand. I just don't get it. I sometimes I don't get business, right? I mean, I just don't. I don't, because I think that if you do the right thing, that people build, you know, just make a pathway to your door. That you don't, you know, the selling people and being dishonest. And, you know, I recently went through the hell of buying a car. God, I should have walked out. Yeah, I haven't had a new car in 12 years, right? So I got one. My friends make fun of me, right? It's like, oh, really? So now does the car, you know, can you actually take a phone call in your car? Yeah, I mean, well, the answer is, yeah, my Bluetooth didn't work in the old car. So, yeah, I had to admit that was true. I'm just not a car guy. But I went through that. And it's like the constant, ridiculous, just make me a deal. And I was there forever. Forever. And then you got to go to talk to the finance guy, even if you're paying cash. You got to talk to him. And you got to, oh my gosh, it just goes on and on and on and on and on and on. Why? Because they're trying to sell you coatings and this and that and extended protections and blah, blah, blah. It's a terrible process. I hate it. Different. All right, we got to take a break. We'll be back in hour number two. Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm a little early, aren't I? I am a little early. All right, we are going to be back in just a couple seconds here. And when we come back, I've got a couple things from last week. Percy options. I'll answer that question. Stay tuned. Hello, welcome. And again, thanks for joining us. Please do so either on email, dave@petsofinancial.net, or on the phones at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We want to talk about what you want to talk about. We did get calls last week, and one of them was about talking about Percy options, and I'll talk about that in a moment. And we have had other ideas, like you know, to talk about what's going on in the news regarding the 401k options, if it's good or not. So I appreciate those in the middle of the week, and if you do, that's at petsofinancial.com. We also at PetsoFinancial.com have calculators and articles to help you with your financial planning, and podcasts are available there too from our past programs. Okay? But here today, it's dave@petsofinancial.net. All right. So, Percy options. It's pretty straightforward. There's some different, if you will, what are called lifestyle options, and I'll come and circle back to those. But basically, these are all index options. There are no managed accounts available, okay? And are not Percy options, excuse me. I believe it was the government options under the thrift plan. I wrote down Percy because I think thinking in Idaho, okay? But the options are basically the S&P 500, small cap called the Russell 2000. There's an international index. And there is a government bond and a fixed rate, which are really quite similar, okay? So five options. Guarantee and very, very low interest on two of them. And then three different stock indices. The rest of them are some combination of those. But I always think you should just build your own because it's not that hard to do. And it doesn't take ongoing monitoring or anything like that. And the reason I do is because right now interest rates are so very low. I really don't want any part of something that is just earning inflation and guaranteed to only earn inflation. Why do I want to do that? Here's my 2% return. Thank you very much. That's not going to build any wealth, any security at all. That's just being scared and hiding, and maybe I'm watching too much news or something. Maybe I need to understand that markets are volatile, yes, but the long-term trend is 100% of the time up. Maybe I need to understand that more than getting caught in the day-to-day fearful news. But either way, right now, where interest rates are, I just don't think there's any room at all for putting money into short-term. You might say, well, I'm getting older. I'm going to retire in 5 years. How come I don't put some in? And the answer is, in most cases, if you're under a government program, you're getting some other pensions as well. How much of this money here is going to be what you live on? And if some of it is, that's fine. We will begin a transition, but that transition is typically 1 year, 18 months before you retire, not 5 years. You see, retirement's not an end date. It's a change date. I'm retired, so I'm not putting money in, and I might be taking money out. It's not an end point where, okay, now I'm now retired, I need all of that money available because I'm putting it under my mattress. That's not what people do. They don't need it all right now. They need an income stream off of that money. That's a change point. But if you put it in the lifestyle programs, then and you say something like, I'm going to go into the 2025 program because that's when I'm going to retire, they're going to have a huge piece in bonds. As if the destination on the 2025, 6 years from now, 5 years from now, 4 years from now, 3 years and so on, is that they deliver 100% of the dollars on that date. Not now transitioning to a retirement portfolio. It's a, here's all the cash. Go forth and be happy. And that might be fine, but I don't know why you wouldn't be investing now for the rest of your life. Think 20 years, 30 years, 40 years of retirement. Why would I be in cash earning nothing? That's not providing an income. That's providing nothing. And so we don't want to be thinking in terms of that or using these lifestyle choices or target date. They all mean the same thing. It's designed per my age. Sounds great. But in reality, it's not. The theory is, oh, yeah, this is designed for me because it's targeting my retirement date. But it's only targeting that as a cash pile, not a change date. So if I'm thinking I want income for life, I want to be building a portfolio of the greatest income stream I can. And the greatest income stream you can do is stocks. Now, I wish there were better options. I totally get it. The options are all index funds. They're not targeted for dividends and things like that. I get it. An equity income fund would be nice, but it's not available. So the S&P is what I would use, along with the some small cap. That's it. Everything else is hopelessly bad. International indices are terrible. They're just terrible. They don't work very well internationally. Because as an example, and this is an extreme example, but it is also a real example, is Japan. In late 1980s, believe it or not, 30 years ago is when their market hit its high, and it was half of the international index, a little over, actually, half. So half of your international money had to be invested in Japan, which began its decline. and got cut two-thirds. And you're just stuck there with the largest allocation is the one that's going down, down, down. You can't leave. It's an index. Finally, because you lost so much money, it shrunk down to like 25% of the index. Because you lost so much. So it's an extreme example, but it really happened, and I don't think it makes sense to just broadly around the world say, okay, this is how much goes here, period, no matter what the conditions are. U.S. seems to work a whole lot better. So I would stay with U.S. in that regard. Hopefully you've got other investments out there. I'm not treating this as if it's the only money you have, because if it is, that's going to be a problem. I don't know that you can retire. So if that's the only, this is assuming, then you could do some international investing elsewhere for diversification. You could do some equity income type investing for starting to build that income producing piece. All of that is in that assumption. But if you're basically looking at it, the only reason, one other thing I'll add, and that's this, if you're getting within a couple years of retirement, and you are going to be using some of this money, then I would begin making contributions. It does depend on market conditions. If you want, you can certainly just move some money over into the government or fixed income account. Some, very little. And how much is very little? 2 years' income needs. That's all. It's all we're trying to build on that side. We want the long-term investment. And then when you retire, you roll it out, and then you can do it in a more of an income creation vehicle, not pure stock. Something that's geared for regular income, growing streams of income that outpace inflation. So a couple years prior, preferably 18 months to be more specific, we want to start making contributions into a fixed bucket. If you are taking money from that in retirement, so that we've got the first year to 2 years alone are sitting in that bucket in case, because this is the only way to plan for retirement. The day you retire is the beginning of a bear market. Then we've got capital to sustain, so we're not selling down into a bear market. Okay? So that's Percy. If you have any other questions, please give me a call. It's 580-5436-580-KIDO. Also, if you prefer email, one more time, it's dave@petsofinancial.net. Let's do ring them up. Let's give us a call, and we'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436-580-KIDO. That is our number. We'd love to hear from you. Once again, if you prefer email, it's dave@petsofinancial.net. All right, let's go ahead and go to the phones here. We got Jim calling. Jim, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Dave. How's it going?
Excellent. Good day.
I wanted to remark on one of your hated words and draw an interesting connection to Trump.
Okay.
Now, I figure your hated word pretty much is annuity, right? Okay. Now, it's interesting how Trump, this is how Trump's mental facilities sometimes work, you know. How he'll get on one thing, like one word, right? I mean, when they were talking about impeachment, you know, he's saying impeach, impeachment, bad word, very bad word, horrible word, evil word. And, you know, it'd be funny if the Democrats came up and said, okay, how about firing squad? Oh, firing squad, much better, much better.
Yes, that's true. You're right. You're right. But like I said, there's a small percentage that are out there that are okay, but it's very small.
Yeah, I guess I briefly went over the new annuity thing years ago with my advisor and looked at it and discarded it. But I'm one that likes, I don't like consistency, you know. I mean, I kind of like risk. And that's why for the longest time I never worked at a regular job with a regular paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of like things that are up and down.
You know, it's an interesting point, too, that for people in their risk tolerance, that's why I mentioned that if you can't, there's just a lot of other options out there that are so much better. So much better. I'm not saying that people have to be like you and I. I mean, I've you know, I can be fired and easily. I have many, many, many bosses, right?
Right.
People that hire us. But I can't be fired, really. Not everybody's going to gather together and fire me all at once, right?
Right.
And so, but you know, that's the good side. The bad side is in 1980 in Boise, Idaho, trying to make a living, and all you got paid on is what you killed, and you're 19 years old. That was that was brutal. It's hard to find anything to kill when you're 19 years old, and working on a commission is a tough thing. So I get it, and I am more of a risk taker than some people are. I would die in a government job with all the rules and all the silliness. I talk about the political correctness and the absurdity that, you know, of getting in trouble for calling women girls, and not in a derogatory way, just as a reference. We're all, not all a bunch of little girls here. Well, that's about throwing women in a bucket. I guess I should have said all a bunch of little boys, and that wouldn't have been a problem.
Well, years ago, I had this girl, you know, girlfriend, and I called her a girlfriend once. She said, "I am not a girl, I'm a woman." But in your case, okay, you've got.
Gee, I wonder why you didn't wind up marrying her. Such a nice person.
She was rather flighty. She was nice, but she was gone, and, you know, yeah. Which was all for the better, I guess. But you talk about your bosses. Okay, you've got two fronts, right? You've got the investment thing, you've got your clients there, but you've also got your radio listening audience.
Mm-hmm.
And so I presume that you have got to, in a way, I mean, at least hope that your ratings are up somewhat, you know?
Well, you know, and it's true. Jim, that's one of the things that over the years that I've become very aware of is that a lot of people do listen. A lot of people never comment about it, but there are a lot of people out there, and there's a lot of people that aren't listening now that will be listening this week on podcast.
Yeah, and you got to keep it entertaining or whatever so that they will listen.
Well, and that's absolutely true. But and most of all, the one thing we did get right on this 35 years ago was I'm here to educate, and I'm not here to sell you. And if you listen and you like what you hear, probably over the years some people will find us, and that's been true. But we're not going to drive you to a seminar. We're not going to ask you to give us a call. I'm not going to say this, you know, well, in order to get the, you know, the secret information, the stuff that we're really trading on, you got to call this number. That's not what we do. And so it's been a very, if you will, it just kind of flows right through. We're not trying to have to be different with our clients, and we're different on radio. We're the same.
Have you heard those commercials? Somebody comes on, "I've got the perfect stock tip." And he says, I used to be like vice president at Goldman Sachs and all this BS, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I can't believe anybody fall for that, but they know.
They do. The one that gets me, the ones that get me, I guess, the most are the TV commercial ones. Those are the ones. Like I'm Bill Duvain, right? Okay.
Right.
I don't know what movie he's in, but I know he's an actor of some kind, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, but I guess he played a financial guy in a movie or a show. But why would I care what's in his safe? What does that have to do with anything? If I'm a gold selling place, why am I hiring or the guy with the mint? Right? He was the guy that ran the mint. Like, that makes him a currency expert. It makes him a printing expert. People are like, "Oh yeah, well, he ran the mint, so he must understand the currency fluctuations around the world." And wow, it's just crazy to me what people will be doing or ordering from. And then it's not just the financial ones; it's the medical ones. "I want to wave this flashy device over my knee so my knee pain goes away," says the crooked former "Let's Make a Deal" guy.
Speaking of currency, did you hear the last couple of weeks there's been counterfeiting going on around here? Did you hear a story about somebody passing $100 bills?
I haven't heard that, no. Uh-uh.
Well, I heard that in the news. It was a couple of weeks ago. And the day before, I'll swear, in the picture they showed, this was not the same guy. But I was at a dollar store, and the guy right in front of me, you know, gets to the checker, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he says, he actually asked her, "Will you take a $100 bill?
Yeah.
And she hesitates a little bit and says, "Yes." Well, he was buying. He bought two shakers, like salt shakers, and two packages of gum. And then she looks briefly at the $100 bill and gives him, I guess, $96 change.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, this guy's got, you know, what, you know, this girl needs training.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway.
Yeah. It's tougher and tougher. Technology is pretty good about seeing those nowadays.
Yeah. I mean, it's too bad that they can make such a, I would love to own, just for the hell of it, a $1,000 bill or a $500 bill. That'd be cool.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, the way they can, counterfeit, there's no way those are going to be, you know.
Yeah, they're not in circulation, but I think you can buy them. I think they're collector items. Yeah.
I just hope that cash never totally goes away, you know.
Yeah.
I mean,
the government does. The government does.
Well.
They'd love it to go away. It would help tax collection.
Well, can't we all go back to the barter system in that case?
You can still barter. But that's not the same as all the cash businesses that don't report, right?
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot of stuff under that. That's why a national sales tax would be the best thing.
It would. It cleans everything up. It does.
Right.
And it makes it completely fair because those rich people that spend so much money will pay more taxes.
Well, yeah, and then the drug people, whatever. Whatever you buy, you're going to pay a tax on.
That's right. Exactly. Except for drugs, though. So we got to figure that one out. Okay. All right, Jim.
Take care.
Thanks for your call. I appreciate it. Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. You know, as far as the economy goes, right, we talk about this all the time. How do we look for market tops? And I know it's getting more concerning because of all the trade difficulties. And here comes over the weekend, Sunday, the Chinese are going to come up with their list of paybacks for our rhetoric on, well, in particular, they're really mad. You know what they're really mad about? Not the tariffs. They're mad about Huawei. That's the big one. Because that's their big tech theft company. They just stole all the stuff to get started. Now they're good enough. They're doing their own new stuff. But it sounds like maybe some of their good new stuff includes some really cool things to allow the future governments of a totalitarian regime to spy on their enemies when they're trying to take over the world. And Trump says no. Interesting. And they're angry about it. But that's what's coming on Sunday. So we're in this world of well, here's that trade war. And we go back to, how's the economy? It's good. It's good. And you can't get market tops. It just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. So you have to look at the underlying, how is the economy? It's very good. Jobless claims, still solid. Very few of them. PMI is rising again. It's a manufacturing index. Consumption rate is still increasing. We're up over 5%. That's consumer consumption. It's a healthy economy. It's a healthy, healthy economy. And that's the underlying. And that's Wall Street and Main Street are two different animals. And you have headline risk when you think about things day to day. But when you think about things day to day, you are always worried about, quotes, the risk. And I don't know if I should invest now. And da da da. And we end up missing every opportunity to get in. Every one of them. Because there's always stuff to be worried about, and even more so in today's world. Much more so. Why? Because we over-report everything. The whole world is under this giant microscope of, oh yeah, the Chinese here, and then the Russians here, and collusion, and all. It's just on and on, 24/7, and it's louder and louder and louder. Why? Because everybody's got an outlet, and so we got to scream even louder, so that you see me. I'm over here. Watch me. And there's this constant competition for eyeballs. It doesn't help us think through things on a long-term basis. Is the economy good? Yes. Are corporate profits good? Yes. Okay, then you can just put a period on it and just keep moving. Knowing we're going to have bumps, knowing we're going to have headline risk all the time. And the only thing you should be paying attention to with headline risk is this a good time to be moving money in because we had a headline risk sell-off? Not a fundamental risk, like the economy is really disintegrating. Not that. But it is a funky world right now. And I know there's a lot of fear. But I think we're going to get through this trade stuff. I think we're going to get through this stuff with Mexico. They got no choice. Really? Mexico? You got to puff your chest at the United States of America? Seriously? It's not going to happen. But we all want everything just to be okay right now. Right now. Right now. Instead of okay long term. But I sense a shift, don't you, that this is bipartisan. We got to do something about China. Got to. Other than Joe Biden, I have that sense. Nobody thinks the Chinese are good actors. Okay, our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Do give us a call, okay? We got 30 minutes left in today's program. Where are those phone calls? 580-KIDO. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. That's our number. And if you prefer email, that's all right. It's dave@petsofinancial.net. Right now, let's go to George. George, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Dave. I have been reading Steve Forbes' book, Money, which is about an argument for going back on the gold standard. And it reminded me of George Santayana, that philosopher back in 1952, said that those who are ignorant of history are doomed to repeat it. Mm-hmm. And he covers the historical reasons for going on a gold standard and staying on a gold standard. And he corrects a whole bunch of misconceptions, one of which I held for a long time, and has pretty much convinced me that we need to do that. That the United States needs to peg the price of our dollar to the price of gold. So I don't know if you know anything about that or if you've read that book, but it totally persuaded me.
Yeah, George, I don't ever want to disagree with Steve Forbes because he's a very thoughtful person. But he's really been stuck on this gold thing for. I remember seeing him 30 years ago at a conference. He was one of the speakers there. That was his main theme then. Mm-hmm. Gosh, I can't remember how long ago. Was it over 30 years ago? I think he ran for president on the flat tax, which was to me is simply brilliant. And it's too bad we've just not adopted something along those lines. So I think he's a great thinker. I think he's a great patriot. I really do. This man really loves America and spends his time trying to make the lowest level people do better in a capitalist society, which I know people think he's just a capitalist trying to feather his own bed. His bed is feathered as much as he's going to need. And so he spends a lot of time doing that. So I mean that sincerely. Mm-hmm. But I don't know on this a gold thing. I've heard arguments both ways. It's a very difficult transition. I'm not sure that it is necessary. I haven't been convinced. But, George, I get it. I do. It adds some fiscal austerity that politicians never have. So there is certain there are certain things that it does do. And I can't, so I can't, it's not like we're going to trade in gold bars. That's not the point. It's pegged and currency isn't limited because of it. It's the price or value of that currency is pegged to the price of gold. But yeah, that can also create great distortions as well. Gold prices can move tremendously as well. And so we have to also acknowledge that could create incredible disruptions to trade. If you have a move, it takes 30 days to get shipment overseas, and all of a sudden it gets here and it's worth 10 or 20% less or more, is not what you want to do for trade.
Mm-hmm. Well, he covers that, and one of the misconceptions. Well, there are a couple of misconceptions that I had, and one of them was that there's not enough gold in the world to cover all of that. But his argument is that it's not the amount of gold, it is the value of it. That he says that changing that, changing the value of gold will not change. It's a standard. It's just a standard, and it says any more than putting 12 inches on a ruler will change the rulers, all the rulers in the world, yardsticks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that was one of the things that I had not understood about it. And he also covers that thing about the price of gold going up. And he points out that the reason that it did was because that the price of the value of a dollar is not linked with it. That if the value of a dollar was linked with gold, gold wouldn't be doing that kind of stuff. And historically, it hasn't changed all of that much.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that it's kind of like our Bureau of Weights and Measures. You know, you've got a standard, and this is biblical too, because in the Bible, the nation of Israel was commanded that they were to have honest weights, so that both parties that were making trades could agree on what they're doing. And it's like that just makes perfect sense. I remember. Of course, I grew up during the time. I got evidently the Bretton Woods Conference back in 1946 or 7,
mm-hmm.
that they pegged the value of a dollar to gold, and that was such a stable time. I mean, all the way up to 1971, and then I remember President Nixon arguing for Keynesianism, and taking us off of that.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since then, Dave, I remember that. I remember the stability of those times up to 1970, 71, and then instability from then on. So,
well, the 70s were tough, okay?
Yeah, they
but
were.
I certainly think since the 80s, or the last 30, almost 40 years now, has been very, very, very stable.
Yeah, well, we've ended up with way too much dependence on the Fed. There are all kinds of things. I don't know if you read the book?
No, I have not.
You ought to read that book. I'll just make a pitch to you for it.
Okay,
so,
good.
Anyway, and I know you know far more than I do about those things. I don't know a lot about it, but going through the historical aspects of it from mm-hmm. when Britain did that back in the, 1700s, I think it was, and the stability that it gave to the Brits, a lot of good stuff there. So anyway, I'll recommend it to you. And then maybe sometime later, if I'm still here, we can talk about it.
I like it. I like it, George. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks.
Hey, have a great day. I appreciate your call.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Let's go to Wayne in Meridian. Wayne, how are you today?
Good morning. Just fine. Your opening comments regarding the annuities that would give a lifetime income and so on, any provision in there regarding inflation?
No, and that's a really valid point, and one of the negatives of annuities in the first place, a huge negative. Now, we live in a very low inflation world right now, and so people don't think about it, but even at 2 or 3%, we all know how much that erodes over a lifetime of retirement into almost, less than receiving effectively far less than half of what you were receiving in the beginning, and that is the biggest problem.
But I remember well 1978 and 79.
Oh my, the 70s were so difficult. That was so terrible, yes, and yeah. It was. And I don't disagree with that at all. It was a very difficult time. So
yeah.
And inflation was very real. Life expectancies are exploding, and I think you bring up a fantastic point, Wayne, that this is a very important thing to remember. There have been attempts, and I imagine there will be in the future, to try to put some kind of inflationary features in it. That's not impossible to do. And
uh-huh.
and they really did do that. They were set to have an increasing income. But
uh-huh.
then it pulled the stock market back into it for people. So they had a variable income stream. It,
uh-huh.
over time, did much better, because markets go higher, but it is it wasn't built in to do that. Now, you can build it in, but it's very, very low income to start if you build
mm-hmm.
in a rising stream of income, and most people don't like it. And so they went the way of the dinosaur. Nobody liked them. They got rid of them. Too low
so
income to start.
You would probably end up not having enough money to live on from the beginning.
I think you're right. That's exactly. So do we have too little now or too little later? Right?
Or both.
That's right. Yeah. And so you have a circumstance where I think that people on those, if you're doing going to do an income, you need to have a reserve of capital that's simply there growing so that 5 years or 10 years out, you can begin to tap a small amount of income, a rising amount of income to offset the loss.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So, you're going to have to create it on your own. Yep.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Great point, though, Wayne. Thank you for your call.
Thank you very much. Uh-huh. Bye.
Bye now. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Let's take our final break. And when we come back, we got Paul that wants to talk about China possibly cutting off the rare minerals to the U.S., what that might do. We'll see. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. Hey, comments, questions during the week, send those over to petsofinancial.com. Also over there is our articles, calculators to help you with your financial planning as well as podcasts. And our number here today is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Let's go to Paul. Paul, thanks for waiting. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, Dave. How are you today?
I'm well, thank you, sir. How are you?
Doing good, thanks.
Good.
So this China thing heating up. What happens if they cut us off from the rare earth minerals?
Yeah, I'm not sure how. I mean, yes, they're the big we're big importers of that. Do I think we have stockpiles of it to handle it? Yeah, I do. I'm guessing that we aren't that stupid. The same way as we began oil reserves when we were oil dependent, right?
Okay.
I don't know that, and I'm sure the United States isn't going to talk about that because. I mean, we might say we've got stockpiles, but they're not going to be specific. I mean, that would be why would you do that for your enemies? Tell them everything you have and everything right. You're doing, you know, so you're not. And I think it's clear that China is an enemy. And so I don't think we at a high level, even though we understand this and this is not meant to be a political statement, but Obama did nothing with the Chinese. I mean, absolutely nothing was completely rolled over. Completely rolled over in the Middle East, all that thing. I mean, his foreign policy was a complete, unmitigated disaster. There's no doubt about that. But do I think that they were unaware on a military basis and everything else what China was doing and where they were going and what if we were cut off from these minerals and we're just going to be left hanging? So let's not keep a reserve. I cannot fathom that. So at this point, Paul, I'm not particularly worried. And I'm also not thinking that China wants to quite unleash the nuclear option, which I think that would be. But as I said, this Huawei thing is big. What's that?
That could be a declaration of war.
In a sense, it is. It's a sense. It's an out and out. We're not talking anymore on the trade front. And China would just be would have a very, very difficult time surviving, not trading at all. With the U.S. I mean, I just don't know what would happen to their economy. I cannot imagine. And ours isn't going to do good, but theirs would be a complete unmitigated disaster. And what are you going to do with 1.5 billion people that are really angry? Yeah, that's tough when you're a totalitarian regime. You like to lord over all the decisions over all the people and give no freedom for the choice of getting a paycheck. But if you're not getting a paycheck, that's a tough place to be.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going to happen. I just don't know that they're going to pull the nuclear option. But we'll see on Sunday. This could be quite an interesting weekend for us regarding that. That's what the Chinese are saying. They're weighing their options.
Do we process any here?
What's that?
Do we process any here?
We have to have some. I just don't know. I think it's minimal. It's like it's all in China, but... not all, but some, most is. It's kind of like we're the Saudi Arabia of natural gas here. You know, God has blessed certain regions of the world with abundant resources of different kinds. And we get oil and now we get energy. So, we get everything really. Some of everything. We've got a pretty amazing piece of ground here, but, I don't think we have enough of the rare earth minerals, and everybody in the United States hates mining. So just like
that's got to change.
Yeah, and it does, but it doesn't until there's a crisis. It's kind of like energy. It's like anything else. Everybody hates it. We all wish it would just, like magic fairy dust, just be all over everything, but we don't actually have to get our fingers dirty. Or, you know, I don't want to dig up the earth, but we have to in certain aspects, and it's an important part of what we consume. Or for military use to keep us safe. So there's a number of reasons that we have to do these things that people don't like, but people don't like it. And so we don't dig for things anymore in the United States. I have a client that's tried to get a mine open for over 20 years. I mean, the Forest Service, they won't say it, but their objective is to keep people out of the forest. I think that that's their objective. I don't think that they actually will put that on their logo, but it's how they act. It's all the rules they have.
Yeah, not till they burn it down.
Right, exactly. Then you can go there and look at dead sticks. But you can't. It's just a weird thing where we are. We can't utilize the resources we have. I understand protecting them, but there's a balance here, and you're right. We need to start having our own rare earth materials wherever they are. I don't care if we never dig for gold again. I don't care about that.
Yeah.
But I do care about making sure we have the minerals for the base of everything.
All right, Dave. Thank you very much.
Paul, I appreciate it. I think it's something to keep our eye on. Yeah, we may find out on Sunday that they did.
Well, I'll be watching.
We'll see. Thanks again for the call.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye now. And we have time if you want to ring us up. It's 580-5436. 580-KIDO. All right. I'm going to leave you this thought, because this is what we've been noodling on, right? Is one of those things that we've been talking about, okay? I don't have enough time to really dig into it, but when we look at and think about averages, and we talk about this all the time, people love to toss it out. You know, on average, the S&P 500 trades at a 16 PE ratio. Okay. What does that have to do with anything? Well, what that tends to mean, and what people are saying, is that the market is expensive or it's cheap. Now, when we talk about averages, I think it's important to understand that the average temperature of a boiling bucket of water and an ice bucket, on average, I'm comfortable. But I assure you, if I have 1 foot in each of those buckets, I would be terribly uncomfortable. But you're going to quote the average. So it doesn't make sense many times, and yet averages are so overused. So when we're thinking about different averages, or we're talking about different things, well, is this going to return to the mean? And this is back to our discussion of a few weeks ago, of talking about finding value or value stocks, and do we lean towards value stocks over growth? And growth is clearly more volatile. For example, one of the most amazing companies in the world, of course, is Google. I mean, just, you don't have to like them. I personally don't either, but I own their stock. I don't like them monitoring me. I just don't like it. I don't like them spying on people. I don't like their arrogant attitude that they're smarter than everybody else, especially those of us in flyover country. I don't like it. Don't like it at all. But their cash flow, you know, and Google's pretty cool, right? I mean, it's pretty amazing. Go in and just tap in anything, and there it is, the information I need. It's pretty astounding. But we're seeing them under attack this weekend, right? So you're probably going to see the stock just really ripped up next week. Probably. I don't know. I assume so. But we'll see if there really are investigations and things like that. And it'll take years, and it'll be a whole bunch of people that stand there and try to, you know, make great speeches in front of the cameras. So how much will they actually do? But growth versus value, it's been so extreme. So we talked about this, about how you have to rethink it. Where is value? Are you just going to go out and buy companies that are in secular, not cyclical, decline? Again, the difference is companies that are on their way out of business. And I think we have to understand the world's moving at a very fast pace, an ever-increasing pace of change. Is the auto industry going to look anything like it does today in 10 years? I mean, do you really think we're going to have car dealerships that are the same? If I had a dealership, I would worry about that. I'd be thinking about it all the time. How do I stay relevant? Not now. 5 years from now, 10 years from now. If you're a financial advisor, how do you stay relevant against artificial intelligence? We think about that. We know what our real function is. We understand that we're psychologists, that we're here to help people think through the great problems in their life, not pick the best investments. That's a tiny part of what we believe is going to be the future of financial advice. Helping people overcome their fears and stay out of in equity indexed annuities and understand that what these things are. And understand who people are and what function they are, where they are in life. Like right now, they're scared to death. They just lost a spouse. That's not a time to overreact. They're scared to death because they just entered into retirement and the market's acting funky. That would be called being human. There's nothing wrong with that. We just got to get through this period. All these things. That's how you try to stay relevant. But that's going to change too. Well, those are the things we think about in that industry. But when you think about it from averages in the market, why am I talking about P/E ratios all the time? I know that the news has to fill pages every day of drivel. But it doesn't mean it's relevant to us. And that's what we have to do and watch what these averages are telling us. See, interest rates matter, don't they, to what the average P/E ought to be? The growth of dividends, doesn't that matter? Growth of earnings, doesn't that matter? Or do we really run averages of what it was like in 1960 when interest rates were 8%? Of course we don't. But that's what we talk about. All right. Have a great weekend, everybody. PetsoFinancial.com if you have comments or questions. Have a good weekend.